Blog Talk Radio.
Poetry. Happy Friday, everyone. TGIF. All caps, exclamation points, the whole nine yards. Hi, Rex. How are you tonight?
All righty. How about you?
Oh, you know, no sense complaining. You know how that works, you know. Same old, same old. You know, every day is a new adventure. Yep. You know how
that be sure.
Oh, my goodness. Amen. Yeah, we got we have a nice full board tonight. We really do.
Yeah.
It looks like a great board. Yep, it feels good. It we have carryovers. Like we have carryovers from last Friday. We have carryovers from Tuesday. We have carryovers from Wednesday. No, we don't have Wednesday. So it's not Frisky Friday. But that day will happen again. It always does. So yeah, we have quite a bit going on. So it should be a good mix of poetry, absolutely. And, yeah, as always. So let's see. I don't know. What else is going? What else? It's Friday. It's quiet. At least in L&P, it's very quiet in L&P. Everybody, you know, I don't know. It must be out.
It's Friday.
I don't know.
And the weather's turning
nice. Yeah, they're all out. I was just going to say they're out and about because the weather's better. So, you know, it gives them a place to be besides.
Yeah, they're out and about digging up spikes.
Yeah, yeah, how true, how true. Yeah, so, I don't know. I think it's going to be maybe a quiet night. People are out, you know. Oh, well, that's okay, Audra. We will forgive you. Yes, she was going to call in, but she is deep. So we'll forgive you. We will forgive you. But it is quiet. Very quiet. Naturally so. I don't know. Everybody must be tied up somewhere doing something, other good stuff outside. Maybe they're planting flowers in the dark. Oh, it's not dark everywhere. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to stop playing around. I'm going to get in trouble. Somebody have to throw me in the green room. We don't want that to happen. Anyway, excuse me. I guess we should get the party started, huh? What do you think, Rex? Give it a go around?
Sure, why not?
Okay, well, first we have a caller. And hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party.
Good evening, Rex. Good evening, Gene. How are you both?
Hey, Laurent.
If any better, I'd be twins. Absolutely.
Yes. You're going to carve that on your gravestone, aren't you? I could have been twins.
That's right. I'm going to do it. Yeah. If I was any better, I would be twins. Absolutely. So, let's see now. I don't even know. Again. Okay, I'm going to grab this one. Let's get this one. I don't like hearing myself. Okay, Rush, here we go. It's only by Tony One.
Okie dokie. Marred by Tony One. If it has passed from the high and the beautiful to darkness and ruin, that was of old the fate of Arda Marred. Those lines were Tolkien's conclusion to the Silmarillion, his tale of the First Age. That tale, in its rueful arc, was the man's true vision of the world more than our beloved epic of glorious battle. And in that earliest tale, he made utterly clear that a design, an impulse of beauty and good had been thwarted, compromised, even perverted by one contrary. He believed in the warp and weft of good and evil. A century later, I believe many of us, I suspect most of us, cannot interpret the world that way. Causative forces couldn't correspond to what men and women think desirable, and yet, every time you track the past of a cause, a society, a civilization, and for that matter, every time we imagine a dramatic narrative, doesn't it follow the precise path he described in those words? The high and the beautiful near the start, darkness and ruin the close. In that one line, expressed from his own enormous imagination, he epitomized the human experience of history. He meant something more than rise and fall, something about entropy, delusion, failure. I think Tolkien was beginning to see that to escape the toils of history, we need to achieve a meta-history of some sort. And Tom. Okay. Let's dig in deep into that thought. All right, Laurent, what did you think of Marred by Tony?
This is pretty heavy. I struggled a little bit with the Silmarillion. I found it a tad dry, but that's all right. I was really looking for the exact style of writing or a continuation of The Lord of the Rings itself. Didn't find it. But when I went back to it, I read it years later and did much better with it. You almost have to ask yourself, can an idea or a philosophy conquer the world? Or is it always going to be by the sword? Are we always going to have high ideals, only to to reach that pinnacle and then lose the essence, the purity of what we were, and we begin to become venal and jealous and greedy and all manner of awkward things. As he says, the high and the beautiful near the start, darkness and ruin the close. It's absolutely true. He did epitomize the human experience of history in this poem. Just look at Rome. It reached its pinnacle and grew twisted, self-indulgent, and it collapsed. So, great piece. Absolutely great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think it was a great piece. I think it was very well penned. A great take on the prompt. You know, just the J.R.R. Tolkien prompt as is, without, you know, any of the other, because I don't have all those in front of me. But I think it was just nicely done. You know, I looked at the Silmarillion and I said, yeah, I don't think so. You know, if I'm not going to sit down and read the Bible, I'm sure as hell not going to sit down and read the Silmarillion. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would much prefer to sit and read the Bible than to, it was very dry. It was very dry, and it was a bunch of facts. It was mostly all facts. You know, so-and-so was married to such-and-such, and these were his sons, and then this was the son of that son, and, you know, it goes on with all that in-depth backstories on every one of the characters, which I commend Tolkien for being able to come up with. But as to sit and read it, to me it would be more like reading a phone book, because I can't do that, you know. It's like not my kind of processing. But this poem here was just a great take on Tolkien in general. This wonderful imagery.
But the funny thing is, I've never read Tolkien. Not one single word.
Really?
No,
my gosh.
You still have time.
But I get from this what he's offering up since the Silmarillion is an epic necropoetic styling. There's an impulse that he's drawing on what Tolkien put down in his work is kind of an offering of where we sit today. And it's what was the opening line? Where was it? It is passed from the high and the beautiful to darkness and ruin. That was of old the fate of Ardamard. There's a touch of notice that where something beautiful gets started, then it gets ruined and marred. And it comes with the thought of how people corrupt themselves or get corrupted in their efforts to draw that which they want, as opposed to walking a singular path that they know is right, but they don't really care about. So if in that drawdown down near the bottom, epitomize the human experience. History, you know, something more than rise and fall, something about entropy, delusion, failure. In Tolkien, we're beginning to see that to escape towards history, we need to achieve a meta-history of sorts. There's an idea of a quick washing and sanitizing history as a whole by the victors and give the whole story. So there is a backdrop that everybody can draw from, whereas opposed to the singularity that does get drawn from those who do win as opposed to those who lose.
No.
That was done quite well. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Thank you, Tony.
Nice time.
All right, Jean.
We'll keep this. I know you're back to me, man. I get it.
Yeah, always back.
Okay, Laurent, I'll introduce piece up for you to read by Tomahawk.
All right. This is called An Idyllic Afternoon in an Academic's World by Tomahawk. In this, my sacred place of great literary pursuit, I remand myself to a time of study and solace, for a Sunday afternoon is my idyllic interlude. As an educator, I charge my academic batteries to always have the edge I need to impart knowledge. Therefore, I must always stay ahead of scholastic curve. For my dedication to today's youth is paramount. to pass on to each student the impetus they need and successfully give them the competitive edge that one needs in today's ever more demanding society. Thus, as it ever was, I'm thrilled to be their mentor. So here, I, a student myself, in my sanctum sanctorum, delve deeper into what I was destined to accomplish, that being a teacher, I can make a lasting difference to further a child's love for knowledge and civic duty, so they may face this academically virulent society, which puts greater demands on its people continuously. I would be derelict of my duties if I stayed stagnant. Stagnant in my own continued education as a student, because we can always learn more about life's domain to better equip us for an ever-changing world at large. And so it is that I spend these rewarding times in study. They say forewarned is forearmed. In a scholastic army, may my soldiers conquer the enemy, which is ignorance. Ergo, I remain a student as well as a teacher for life. And I always look forward to Sunday's simple pleasure to serve the community and its children. They, the future. End poem.
Great reading alone. Thank you very much. I like this. A different look from that sort of academics. Actually professes the fact that, yes, he needs to continue to learn in order to teach successfully and provide his charges with that knowledge that may best aid, suit, and help them in their travels across whatever realm they're going to be delving into. I like that sort of, I don't know everything. I go back to the table to learn that which I don't and push forth that. There's a note to paying it forward with this. Nice touch. Thank you, Tomahawk. And Jean, how about you?
How did I know you were coming here?
Tuesday.
I appreciate you going. I think that Tomahawk did a great job with this. I think it was a wonderful take on the chosen prompt. I don't know if you got to see what prompt 8 was. I was just trying to grab it up so we could take a look. Just a really, really well done piece. And I think I want to put the prompt up because I think if you see it, you find how interesting the whole take on it was. I think it was a great spin. So let me... Okay. I'm going to dance and wander around, and I'm going to try and find it. I have to be careful, though, because I don't have the wrong thing up. I get in trouble that way. Run to this place, boy.
You got three. How about you?
Both my parents were teachers, and they were always very concerned with staying on top of the game, so to speak. I can remember my father just poring through magazines and various books and other things, New York Times, seeing what books had just been published in his particular field, and the books never stopped coming into the house, ever. He was just consuming everything. Part of the problem with having two parents as teachers is they tend to pay more attention to their students sometimes than they do to their own children. As far as the poem, it really couldn't be better stated. I mean, you have to stay at that, or doom be thy reward, I promise you. I love the tone of this. I love the sense of it, the obligation to prepare. The teachers are the most important people in our society, at least second to none. Great piece.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And, Jean, that's a hell of a picture. Jeez.
That's the God, I hope I put the right one up. Right.
One old big dog and a curled up beagle sitting in the lap.
I looked at it though when Laurent was reading, and I'm going, yeah, you know, it works. It just works because you know, man, surrounded by books, and there's papers on the desk, and action and kind of kick back with the dogs. And he's just taking a little time for himself. But he looks like he's got a lot of things going on in his life. There's me, too, over by the door. Do you see her?
Yeah, he's going to have one left thing going on. That's going to be that dead leg when he finally gets around to getting that 30 pounds of dog off his lap.
Yep, exactly. How true, how true. Yeah. But, yeah, I wanted to make sure I shared the picture. Because we got all kinds of stuff going every direction tonight. So, you know, try and help everybody. Okay. Let me grab the next one. Yeah, but I think it was a great piece, and I really did. I thought it, his ideas and his words suited the prompt very, very well. Very well. Okay, so the next one I'm going to put up is by Passion's Promise. And I want to give them a read. There's awful sounds on this thing tonight. It's called Sunday's Best by Passion's Promise. It was written to Prince Ken. The moonlight drowns out all the brightest stars. A guest greets the darkness and stands firmly above all. The orbs brightly shining down on us. Oh, precious moon. Oh, how you shine, embracing daytime in your arms, tucking it away for a while. Every detail of life takes a nap while you lead us on a journey within your powerful beam. When lost from your dreamer's playground, the brightest of bursts of light become our universal compass. By morning, you become dressed for the day in your Sunday's best, and the whole skies are lit up. Oh, precious moon, oh, how you play. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you. All right, what do you think of this?
I like it. I really do. Oh, precious moon, oh, how you shine. Embracing daytime in your arms, tucking it away for a while. It's a friendly piece. It doesn't try to do too much, but it's absolutely charming, almost like a little fairy tale. When lost from your dreamer's playground, the brightest of bursts of light. That's good writing. It really is. I like the way it's developed. Sunday's Best, fitting tribute to the moon.
Yeah, I like the title and the war boom and how she used it inside too. It's Sunday's Best, offering up a little play in the motif, and then drawing it to a close with the whole sort of by morning you become dressed for the day in your Sunday's Best, and the whole sky's lit up. Oh, precious moon, oh, how you play. A nice touch to ode to a moon, so to speak. But walking in the fact that you can't have one without the other, and you need both. The pleasure of being. How about you, Gene? You got to read it.
Well, you know, I like the poem very much. And I think it was a great take on that prompt. The moonlight drowns out all but the brightest stars. You know, it was a good take on that. And I was surprised because this is part of J.R.R. Tolkien prompts as well. And I think that kind of threw me because I was like, oh, really? That was just a quote that I wasn't familiar with. But then again, I'm not familiar with all those quotes. But I think that she really did a wonderful job. I love the imagery throughout and the great lines. You know, every detail of life takes a nap while you lead us on a journey within the powerful being. When lost from your dreamers, on the brightest dispersed of light become our universal compass. It was just really nicely pulled together here. So great job, Passion. Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.
All right, where are you going to dip your toes next?
I don't know. Hang on, I got to put something down here. I have to save that for a minute. Okay, yeah, back to the fellas. Okay, now I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. First, I'm going to put up one of the audios, because I have a bunch of them, so I don't want to get lost. Oh, that's not where I want to come. Where am I? Here we go, and this one invites you now. It goes.
Water nourished you. I loft your blossom gently, tilting twilight twigs, petal-piercing azure, and you drank hungrily, candlelight cradles, sleeping silently in a nest. Greenhouse grew wild wandering twining leaves, and the roots roared, snuggling soundlessly in fertile cribs. I kissed you into daily dreams, billowing beautiful pictures, bouncing bouquets into droplets of color, silently dancing sweet ballets to take over a crippled world through ashes, mystic spirits, rescuing ruins. Still remember your birth, chestnut cloves, abandoned fluttering in fetal position, frozen in a pose from moist meadows. There was infinite horizon, my naked cocoon, swallowing the tongue, choking on horizon of early mornings, soft breeze, swaying seance, curing illness, melancholy moods, overtaking burden, lush landscape, seeking deliverance from doom, death, dread. Being possessed by gods of nature, rewinding time, dissolving demons, dancing through petal pirouettes, peepholes with loop-de-loop butterflies, claiming earth, the whimsical, untampered observance of real life, imitating a keyhole, a voyeur's window without need of color, noise, grandeur.
Great read, Chomsky. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Nice. I like this. There's a nice touch of reality, peacefulness in that moment. The greenhouse offers a sanctuary, so to speak, and that notice away from the trappings of the world where you can actually enjoy, watch the burgeoning growth, the birth of what you put your hands to work for, because it takes your mind out of that realm where it's on that sort of, doom, death, and dread. There's peace in that moment because you're actually nurturing life rather than worrying about that which is delivered to your doorstep daily. So there's that nice notice of actually being part of the earth, the soul, that which gives rather than takes. And done rather well, too. I like this. Thank you, Chomsky. All right, Laurent, how about you?
I love greenhouses because greenhouses are nature, and this poem does celebrate nature and does a damn good job of doing it as well. But as she begins, or Chomsky begins, water nourished you, I lofted your blossom gently, tilting twilight twigs, petals piercing azure, and you drank hungrily, candlelight cradles, sleeping silently in a nest. The greenhouse is nature, but it's not wild nature. It's nature controlled. You choose what goes into it. The care and attention that you give it results in something glorious or something pretty dismal. But a good greenhouse will do all the things that he says. I kissed you into daily dreams. The swaying silence, curing illness, melancholy moods, overtaking burden, seeking deliverance from doom, death, dread. The outside world is shut away. You have control over every single thing in the greenhouse. And you do what you need to do and are given, as he says, a keyhole, a voyeur's window, without need of color, noise, grandeur. I think there he speaks to the outside world. It is focused on the inside of the greenhouse. Just a wonderful piece.
Absolutely. There is another thought you could work. I said the greenhouse of the mind as well. Renewing oneself.
Or you can use it on anything, yeah.
Shutting out everything just so you can breathe once more freely. And Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought this was great. I thought it was a great take on the prompt. Very well done. I think that there was good imagery throughout, and just, I don't know, it's really well written. This is much longer than I'm used to seeing from Cal. So I think that he went above and beyond with extra stanzas here, huh, Cal? But nice work, and I really appreciate it. I think it was a great take on that prompt. So well done. Absolutely.
The ball's back in your court.
Oh, it's, oh my goodness, I'll catch on someday.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let you want to curve or a fan?
Absolutely. Oh, please, don't send me anything that's straight, just straight, right towards where it needs to be. You really throw me for a loop with that. I'm trying to find that one.
I'm kind of
carrying
off with that.
Okay, right. The next one is going to be for you. And this is by Beatnik. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. Party in the Jungle by Beatnik. There's a rumble in the jungle. Won't you listen now? People wanting to be wild. Let's forget our reputation, this barren nation, degradation, and party a while. Crank it up and let it flow. Let the good times rock and roll. Don't let yourself grow old. Let the song get in your brain. Make you feel sane again. Party all day and love all night. We'll be in tight. Feeling cool and making friends. We'll hope the fun will never end. It'll be all right. Suburban warfare over at my place. I'll put a smile back on your face. You can stay the night. Party in the jungle. Hear the drums of thunder. Guitars of lightning cast a spell you're under. Feel the ground quake from earth-shaking bass. Heavy metal in your face. And poem.
Nice. Nice reason.
Laurent, how about you? What'd you think?
I see a big block party evolving here. I see a moment in the world when we probably do need to drop the jingoistic chatter, drop the overly, well, I got to be careful here. Everybody needs to set their shit aside, put down the guns, put down the attitudes, come together, turn on the radio, get some good music going, get some good jive flowing, get some good whiskey, get some good smoke, and have a party. I absolutely agree.
You hit it with the smoke because this came off the last week's 420 celebration.
Yep.
All right, Gene, how about you?
Oh, I really like this. I really did. I thought it was clever. It, you know, it was like just a kick-ass party all day, you know, all night. Just, yeah, fall right into that groove. And I think it really works well for the 420 celebration. It was a lot of fun that night. So, you know, it's kind of sad that it just got carried forward, but at least it gives us a little taste of it, you know, towards the end.
I'm
so
aware
definitely
of 420.
A great beat.
I'm aware of 420. I have no idea what it means, though.
Oh,
National Pot Day.
It's the great smokeout day for weed.
Well, yeah, I know that, but how did it ever get started?
I don't know.
Somewhere on the line, somebody decides, hey, today's the day we're going to have appetize it and tell America to light up today.
I thought maybe there was something momentous behind it.
I know how it got started. Let me tell you the answer.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. Sorry, I couldn't resist bringing myself on to join the conversation.
That's all right. That was a great time for us.
It's a police code. 420 is a police code.
Oh. See that? There you go.
And
okay.
Probably use the police code, the time, and then the date. Yep.
Gotcha.
Thank
you.
Yep.
Well, oh, nice
and
job,
hi, Dan. Hi, Lauren. Good to hear you.
Oh,
well,
God.
Did you hear
yeah,
that, Reed?
Yes. Did you hear Beatnik's poem?
Hey, who hear what? Well, oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
Did you hear Beatnik's poem?
Did you hear that beat?
I did not hear it. No, sorry.
okey-dokey.
That's all right. I'll go along with with Laurent on this. It wouldn't be bad having a nice block party running like this where everybody's celebrating, having a good time, just chilling with the music, partying all day and loving all night. Now, that sounds like a very good day. Cheers, Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Oh, it's coming your way.
Okay, go here. Well, the next one I have up is for Laurent. So, Laurent, if you would be so kind as to read this for Jack Tomkovic.
Certainly, certainly. This is called Leggers and Femme. She's all you know. Leggers and Femme. Femme and more Femme, spoke the young British lad. Slender-stemmed pink rose, don't you know? Struts like Mick Jagger in his prime. Dances to honky-tonk stones. Wears silk pajamas, or none at all. That bird, Leggers and Femme, and you know, she's mine. And poem.
Great reading along. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to lead all.
All right. Well, I got to say, great read there, Lawrence. And, you know, I like how we push this back in time. Like, I read this. These lines, she's all you know, Leggers and Femme, Femme and more Femme, spoke the young British lad. I feel like it's about the model Twiggy or that someone of that like 1960s, 1970s time. And it just has a very laid back feel to it. Struts like Mick Jagger in his prime. That's a wonderful line. This poem has atmosphere. Between the young British lad, Mick Jagger, the whole Twiggy vibe, there was that club that was really famous. Studio 47 or I can't remember.
54.
That's it. Thank you. It's a brevity that has a kind of a almost like a Studio 54 vibe and. Very fun and well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think the imagery in this was really well done. You can kind of visualize this girl coming down the catwalk, you know, with this attitude. You know, need a plan behind her. That's what I got from it. But, so Jack, it was a clever piece. He said, it just kind of popped out. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And how that happened. So it was a great piece and clever. It was nice brevity. So, well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, I was totally confused. Me with my literal brain. Leggers and Femme. I couldn't figure out what leggers were. I probably just assumed it had to do with a girl with long, lanky legs, perhaps. I don't know. I thought femme had to do with female. But it, as a poem by itself, and as a brevity, it's quite clever. That bird, Leggers and Femme, and you know she's mine. Although, you know, ironically enough, leggers were actually people who used to lie on their back on boats on a piece of wood. And as a boat went through these tunnels, they would walk on the tunnel ceiling. Something had to do with it's a little note from the past. I'm not sure if it has anything to do with this particular poem, but very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I get a distinct late 60s, early 70s feel out of this with the leggers and the femme angle. And the slender stem pink rose was a nice touch. Struts like Mick Jagger. You remember Mick Jagger back in the early days? He did kind of strut around the stage as though he was doing the twirl on the catwalk down, showing off clothing. So that was a nice touch in that. Dances to Honky Tonk Stones, another nice touch to some of their earlier music. And the silk jammers are none at all. That's just the notice of being home. And the bird. That's definitely pure Brit, as well as the leggers. So, nicely done, Jack, for something that just sort of popped out.
Right. Clever.
Okay,
here we go. Pam, I have one for you if you don't mind.
Okie dokie.
Okay, and I'll be right back. So, just in case you're wondering where I'm at.
All right. Gilda, the Serial Kitchen Killer by Leela Samare. And it goes like this. Hi. Oh, sorry, there's no hi. Let me check that over again. I don't know why Gilda would say hi. Okay, sorry. I'm Gilda. I get up, I glitter, I cook. Lunch lounges under laughing chandeliers. They smile back in the knife blade beam in luminescent light. They illuminate my garish gilded plate, lights light everywhere. Plates talk as they hop and bounce. Feed us, eat us, kill us. Polish, polish me, my Nazi dinner time. Play the macabre music, gold, gold everywhere. But among the plates, shiny gold and pink, one cracks. The gold was gutted by my knife. It was the unsharpened one that spoke to me. Feed us, eat us, kill us. Suddenly, the fridge is jumping for joy. And then there's the vampiric meat I cut up last summer. Dance, hop, hop, dance. It's the one I cut up on last summer. She looks at me vindictively and shouts, "You killed my mother." My knife quivers above the sparkling sink water. Come out, deep fish, octopus, crabs, snails. The chicken wants his gizzard back. Come out. Finger points down in swirling dirty dishwater. Serial killer of meat and crab. Blonde-haired metamony of death. The lights die. All is dark. I scream at the mutiny. One by one do they attack with a metal cleaver. Clean us, you dirty bird. Sing. Dead zombie guests assault me. Shuffling forth vindictively, fork stabs the pork. Once more into the battle of the green fork. I can't stand the pain. Wait for me. Red, red everywhere, dripping. Tomorrow the police will find me in a glass jar. I'll just be two golden eyes and a rotten iris swimming around, contained and happy. My kitchen will finally be clean. End poem.
Great read, Pam. There's a lot of madness in this. There's an almost a touch of Hotel California with the thought of once more into the battle of the green fork, stab it with their steely knives, so to speak. And this kind of hits on the note of somebody who's actually going nuts. But the back end, tomorrow they'll find me in a glass jar, just a few gold lines and a rotten iris. Swimming around, contained and happy. Well, that kind of offers up the note, hey, my place is finally clean. I can actually see it. And I won't have to be drizzled with all this nastiness that I've gotten into all my life. So no more the serial killer, but actually a clean kitchen. Kind of a strange touch, too funny. But I like it. Laurent, how about you?
Sorry, I was on mute. I like it a lot. Kitchen in revolt. every dish, every plate, every knife and fork and spoon, and it either has food on it or wants to be cleaned immediately. You know, she takes that whole bit of cleaning the kitchen and transforms it completely into something absolutely fascinating. Clean us, you dirty bird. Dead zombie guests assault me, shuffling forth. And then there was that bit about the, where is it? Who can find anything? There's some food that had spoiled, I think. Oh, and then there's the vampiric meat I cut up last summer. Dance, hop, hop, dance. It's the one I cut up last summer. you can see all these things in motion. And she's animated so many things that are normally not animated. It's a pleasure to read. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you, Lil. All right, Gene, how about you? You shining on the madness?
I got back. See, I made it back, and I think you can hear me. I thought this was just funny as all get out. I enjoyed the humor in it. Pam, don't you wish you had a bunch of humor pieces like this when you were doing the humor show? You know, where
right?
They just kind of, they just kind of hit the notes. It was really well done. Clever, funny. Well expressed all the way through. And Layla, this is the first I've read of yours, so I hope you'll be giving us a couple more pieces to read in the weeks to come. Just really nice stuff. It's good to have a little bit of change of pace. And it's all applied. So great job.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Gene. Thank you. And Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, this was a fun one to read. I'm looking forward to reading and hearing more from Lila or Leila. I'm not sure, sorry. But I like how fast-paced this felt, like writing it all in one block, and there was this back and forth, and it has really great dark humor. I mean, especially that end, the cracking me up, the drawn out come out, the chicken wants his gizzard back. You know, to me, well, this is like classic serial killer humor, classic dark humor that works really well. It also has that fun underlying message of what, you know, a struggle it is to keep meals in order and keep the kitchen clean and feel like dishes are taking over your entire life. It reminded me a bit of the Maximum Overdrive movie where all the things come to life. But it also, it's also like, Beauty and the Beast, the cartoon where they're all singing.
Yes.
Yep. It's like that. It's like a twisted version of Be Our Guest, Be Our Guest. Put our service to the test. It's fun. I really enjoyed it. So very well done.
Well, there's another one too. Stephen King's The Dark Tower series. The gunman talks of lobstrosities, these huge lobsters that come out of the ocean. They actually took a couple of his fingers at one point. But that had me think of that when she hit on the crabs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome. Yes. Good point.
Definitely funny.
So. All right, Dean, we're coming back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, let me put this next piece up by Osama. And let me give that one a read. You can't have Pam reading two in a row. That would be wrong. Okay, this is called Roots by Osama Chiba. Days alternate between hope and despair. We don't know our strength until we know our helplessness. Dreams like seeds in their ripeness and fullness scattered by the wind into uncharted places, vanishing in the mist. Until another day when they return with the tides, gather into a cloud to fall down in rain and turn the fields green again. Every fruit gains comeliness from the light of the sun, growing to a strong stem from the fertile soil and its powerful roots. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, Sam always gives us a good measure of value in her poetry. And Roots is something that applies to people as well as plants, even animals. The opening days alternate between hope and despair. We don't know our strength until we know our helplessness. And it is in that helplessness, that state of surrender, as it were, that you learn what you're made of, how strong you can actually be, or how weak. And she speaks of dreams like seeds scattered into uncharted places until they return and grow from the fertile soil and its powerful roots. And again, that applies to people, that applies to nature. I like what she does with this. Very good poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laura. And Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was a great take on that prompt. I think it was beautifully written. I love this Anna's work. She's always very straight and to the point, but I think her imagery was good. Her thoughts were well, expressed to everyone that read it. So, nice job. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
This is absolutely beautiful. I love how she touches on the idea of how important the roots are when it comes to bearing fruit. And it makes a wonderful extended metaphor, the idea that, we as people grow when we have those strong, healthy roots. And it is those times of trial and testing that really prove the strength that we have. And this is beautiful all the way through. But I do really particularly like dreams like seeds in their ripeness and fullness scattered by the winds. And then those last lines, light of the sun growing strong stems from the fertile soil and its powerful roots. Beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. She opens up with that. That stanza is kind of almost melancholy in its thought. But she finishes out with what would come as the proper foundation set, which allows those fruit gains, so to speak. And the dreams, everybody's got dreams, and the idea is kind of putting yourself to the stone to realize those dreams. So even though you might end up with a little bit of hope and despair, you don't get anything if you don't try. So the idea is having that strong foundation to begin with, so that even if you fall into despair, there is always hope at the other end, because there's still more dreams to be had. Nicely done, Osama. Thank you. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay, Rex, well, I'm going to toss it back to you and use this piece by Heartthrob.
Oh, okay.
Thanks.
Fade to Rainbow Black by Heartthrob. Spectrums of color against the night shade, a silhouette of rainbow in flight does fade. Western world rapids as fairy tales are told, flight of the bumblebee graceful in song. The hummingbird plays with the nightingale gone, unique is thy habitat in a world gone wrong. A symphony in motion, elusive to sight, a rare moment's grandeur eclipsed the night. Cloaked by its wings as the twilight sky sings, image burnt on canvas, what beauty it brings, shall not be forgotten. And poem. And all right, Pam, why don't we start with you, please?
All right. Well, first of all, absolutely wonderful read there, Rex. I love the rhyme and flow in this, the tender imagery. Western world's rapids as fairy tales are told, flight of the bumblebee graceful in song. I like that because that stanza there makes me think of how in the Western world, in America, we tend to move too fast. We don't take time to look at nature. We don't, too often, it's all about, business, work, keeping up with the Kardashians or whoever the heck we're trying to keep up with nowadays. I can't remember because I'm not trying. And a symphony, I like the use of movement and music in here. I think this is another really fine example of when Phil did this contest for Poetry in Motion, where you see the sense of movement, I like how a cloak by its wings as the twilight sky sings, the image burnt on canvas, what beauty it brings shall not be forgotten. Because sometimes, especially like some, a lot of animals are shy. They don't stay right in front of you constantly. So if you get the opportunity to see something beautiful in nature, it just stays with you forever. It's a very meditative and humbling experience. And so just a beautifully written poem and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
The picture of the hummingbird is a magnificent one. I could well convince myself that this poem was written with that particular piece in mind. As the first stanza suggests, spectrums of color against the night shade a silhouette of a rainbow in flight does fade. You know, the point that Pam made about the Western world and moving too fast was a good one. And that other stanza, the hummingbird plays with a nightingale gone, unique as thy habitat and a world gone wrong. Something has happened for the nightingale to be gone. Maybe it's lost. Maybe it's a symbol of the world today. We don't hear the beautiful music that it used to play. Maybe it doesn't sing the way it used to. But there's an acknowledgement there about the world going wrong. But this beautiful little bird, a symphony in motion, regardless of what happens, will not be forgotten. That's just a great piece.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
I really like this piece. Again, with great rhyme and meter pen, you nailed that one. I thought it was the reflection of the prompt is wonderfully captured. And that was the prompt, Laurent. So I just went back and double-checked it, just in case. I think the stanzas were great. I loved the lead-in stanza, the first one. Thought that was just really nicely done. But I had to grab the next two. I'm trying to put down right now. Spectrums of color against the nightshade. A silhouette of rainbow and flight does fade. Western world rapids as fairy tales are told. Flight of the bumblebee, graceful and song. Just, I thought it was just really nicely captured, and I think you did an excellent job. So thanks for sharing that with us, Heartthrob. I appreciate it. Well done.
Great comment, everybody. This reminds me of here. I just saw my first hummingbird 2 days ago, and I was talking to Jean 2 days ago, and the birds were having a howl of the time outside. They must be outside your window. No, they're sitting right outside with me. You got to hear a red-tailed hawk was having a nice time doing the search, looking for a bit of food. So this wings on that notice. Hey, inner cities, you don't get to hear a whole lot of this. It's out in the a little more countrified setting that you find this kind of world where everything actually sings. Even the wind through the trees, that hoot of the barred owl or the tree frogs and the crickets chirping because the heat and moisture is just right and they're having the time of their lives. But that's what this sings in that notion for me. Thank you, Heartthrob. And back to you.
Oh, must be me. Let me see now. This one goes here. This one goes here. Okay, Laura, I have the next one up for you. I got to turn for a second. I thought, God, did I mess that up? So whenever you're ready. Laura?
Sorry, I was on mute. Beg your pardon. Hummingbirds, Bonners, Ferry, Idaho by Swan Song. The sun drew color with delicate wings, and the tail feathers spread wide in a silent form of jubilation as the hummer skirted through the warm summer air and sipped the sweet nectar without disturbing the feeder. For a moment, the tongue flickered, and the bright eyes held a glimmer as big as a pole star threw from a ruby throat's eye. The tiny claws grasped the feeder, and the bird gazed around, then preened, the fine green-gold wings aligned in a gem-like pattern along its streamlined body. Then lifting in the air, the bird darted off, and in mere seconds disappeared in a grove of cottonwoods lining a small stream, while another flew as in a streak and satiated itself without disturbing the feeder at all. The sun was beginning to settle, as if blazed blue and gold along the wings, as several birds gathered, haggling over their sipping rights, chasing one another, and sometimes calling out in tiny voices, the vibration of their wings, a song in my ear, as they flew close by and on occasion hovered eye level to see my face. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. You're up.
All right. Well, this
seen Swan Song tomorrow.
It's absolutely beautiful. I love to see all the CL write from Swan Song. You can always tell with his writings that he has such an appreciation for nature. I like that he describes the act of, you know, just watching the birds, watching them in their feeders. The tiny claws grasped the feeder, and the bird gazed around and peered, the finding gold wings aligned in a gem-like pattern along the streamlined body. The description of the streamline and the movement of the bird, the lifting in the air as the bird darted off, it all really, it's a very simple moment, but he uses the most beautiful language for us to see every little detail within that moment that makes it beautiful. And a wonderful life all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was just beautiful. When it comes to nature rights and imagery, Swan Song really is always top-notch. He writes some of the most beautiful lines. And I think that this one, it was beautiful imagery expressed. And his nature rights, you know, they're just always great and on point. So I have to give it to him. Excellent piece. Just nice. Like this one. Been lifting in the air, the bird darted off, and in mere seconds disappeared in a grove of cottonwoods, lining a small stream, while another flew in as a streak of catch and satiated itself. Oh, go on, I got to tune my tongue in without disturbing the feeder at all. Just wonderful stanzas throughout, and just nice work. So thank you, Jeff, for sharing with us tonight. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
I can really appreciate this. He's got a fine eye for detail in nature. The tiny claws grasped a feeder, and the bird gazed around and preened the fine gold wings aligned in a gem-like pattern along its streamlined body. You can really see what he's writing it about in your mind's eye. He does a good job moving from action to action, describing the beauty of nature all around it in a very skillful way. The hummingbird is a wonderful bird, and I think it does it justice with this piece.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that one. The hits on those noises and sights at the street rolling in. Most times you don't get to see them, but you hear that, the buzzing of the wings, because it kind of sounds like a bee, because you hear the wings that flapping a mile a minute. But that last stanza was perfect in their representation, because when you get a bunch of them going around and they're all waiting to get into, there's a hierarchy. The bigger ones feed first, and the little ones wait on the outer edge, flapping their wings until there's a spot ready for them to open, to get in there and feed. And so it is a kind of a game, chasing one another, calling out in little tiny voices, so to speak. And it is a treat to watch that kind of a little bit of frenzy, because it's wild. Thank you, Jeff.
Sounds good.
All right. We're coming up back to your way.
Okie dokie. Jim, I have one for you to read.
Okie dokie, Smokey.
Yeah.
All right. Across to the Far Side by Eva Pallazzi, and it goes like this. Where white cliff walls break away into the depths while ocean waves lick high-rising rocks below, and sun rays scatter millions of golden sparks all over on the water's surface when salty winds hiss distant messages and inborn memories of flying call me from beyond the zenith. I push myself away from the crag with unfolded wings, gravel and limestone grit, wild torn furs, dusty weeds shout my name in vain. Earthbound roots forever have been torn apart and shred sanctity from my wing strokes. The shore left behind seems an ever smaller dream receding into past, while unknown certitude fills up my lungs between ocean and sky. I'm free flying home. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you start us off, please?
I like the form of the poem. Again, I like the picture. And I like what the poem, the poet does with it. I push myself away from the crag with unfolded wings. Gravels and limestone grit, wind-torn furs, dusty weeds shout my name in vain. It's almost an animation of being free and somehow being able to fly. It's beautifully done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And Jean?
I usually feel I'm paying attention, don't you? Ha, I am. I think this was wonderful, wonderful work, Eva. Excellent imagery throughout. I thought your thoughts were well expressed all the way down. You know, Pam, that was a great read. I think that, it's really great. And then, while unknown certitude fills up my lungs between ocean and skies, I'm free, flying home. You know, it's a beautiful ending to that. You know, you're flying and you're flying home. And I do like these images. I thought they were really, they were good. I thought they were good prompts to pull someone in and have them write something to, you know, a couple different directions. So this one really was something. Nice work, Eva. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
I like this. This poem makes me think of Jonathan Livingston Seagull. I love the imagery in here of pushing off from the crag with unfolded wings. Salty winds hiss distant messages and inborn memories of flying. There's a sense of spirituality within this, a sense of not being, you know, held down by that which, you know, want those people who want to keep you down, those people who want to make sure that you don't go above and beyond their way of thinking. I think it's just absolutely beautiful all the way through. I love the movement that she created in the staggering of her stanzas and lines, and this is very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments, guys. I like the thought in this because most North American hummingbirds, they winter in southern Mexico and Central America down to Panama. So you get them little tiny birds. They do a whole lot of flying for their little bodies that flap so damn much. That's a long flight. Coming home is that notice, almost like a salmon swimming back to where they were born. But for coming home here, you see the same birds each year up here. You'll notice them. Ruby throats, some a little bit different, some a little bigger than others, and you get to know them as you see them year after year. So I like that thought of the freedom of flying and coming home to a root once more where things are for them something blissful.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jimmy. It's the best.
Okie doke. Let's see, now that is going to bring me back to Joe, right here. I'm sorry. Okay, Laurent, I have your piece up. Oh, no, I don't. I'm coming to Rex because he's first at the top of the list. So, Rex, I'm going to put this up, and we're going to play this. you know what I mean. Here we go. I know you told me to let it go, but I can't do it. Here we go.
On a pine-built mystery skyway, east of Lebanon, no sweet homes, Alabama, where the sisters roll along. He thinks about the jogger and the girl dropped at mama's door. In the forest of his mind, he smiles like he always does as he drives down the 20 into the coming dusk, and he feels the vivid nature of the one who's now a husk. I see you there, out on the road again. Yes, you're there, out on the range. There you are, gonna maim again, and we know that gilded cage. Well, he's been hunting down in Newport, just around the bend. The girls, his eyes upon them, he knows they can't defend. Driving on that back road, getting ready to explode. Sometimes he hears them cry, other times they moan. When he slips that knife inside, comes a whispering groan, and he always been satisfied amongst the piney cones. I see you there, out on the road again. Yes, you're there, out on the range. There you are, gonna maim again, and we know that gilded cage. Out there in the moonlight, Camp Sherman on the way, Lava Fields, Europa, they are here to stay, and the music howls in silence while Snow Creep weeps away. Now that dawn is coming, you've washed away the red, and those amplified whisperings are singing of the dead. You toast the night's adventure, remembering how she bled. I see you there, out on the road again. Yes, you're there, out on the range. There you are, gonna maim again, and we know that gilded cage. I see you there, out on the road again. Yes, you're there, out on the range. There you are, gonna maim again. And we know, and we know.
Great job, Rex. Great job. Laurent, you want to start us off on this one?
Sure. That was a great parody. Got girl Willie Nelson, right? You know, that the whole theme of being on the road again is a great theme. I mean, Willie's done stuff. Canned Heat has done stuff. So I was very appreciative listening to you sing this, because it was a masterful adaptation that stands out there in the moonlight. Camp Sherman on the way, Lava Fields, Europa, they are here to stay, and the music howls in silence as Snow Creek weeps away. It is a great stanza. That line and those amplified whisperings are singing of the dead. I was riveted by this piece. It has a haunting aroma of death about it that I thought was conveyed in a style perfectly suited to the subject matter. This is how to tell a story that reads like a song that sends shivers up the listener's back. You know, the tone of this piece with your lyrics, I thought created a sensation to me that was very similar to the intro song to the first year of HBO series True Detective. I don't know if you ever watched that, but it had a great, outstanding intro song. And it just gave me the shivers, same thing.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much.
Work on a grim subject. I loved it.
Thank you.
Nice. Pam, how about you? Pam, are you back?
She's on the road.
She's mutating.
Bob Seger, I don't know. But yeah, I think it was. This is excellent. Yeah. I remember when I started playing it. I have to remember what link I had up, right? And I clicked it, and I'm going, okay. And then as you're singing, I'm like, hey, I kind of remember this. But it was definitely very well done, and you were spot on all the way through. I thought that was great. And I think Bob Seger would be proud. You know, he might like to get some glory of it, but you know, what the heck. And it does remind me of a movie I saw the other day. It was an old movie that I finally found a second time around. It was called The Nature of the Beast. And there was a dude going down the road, and he was killing people as he was going down the road. And so, of course, that was fresh in my mind when you were when this was playing. So I found that to be somewhat comical. I was like, ooh, I don't know about this. Well, Pam, are you back, hon?
Well, they did make a movie. It was called The Highway 20 Killer.
Oh, yeah? Amazing.
Yeah, it's,
I don't know. I don't like
it. I think his name is John Aykroyd. He's out in Oregon.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but it was definitely a nice parody. Very well done. And
thank you, everybody.
Pan's not back. I guess I have to.
That's all right.
I am back, but I didn't get to hear whatever was played.
You didn't hear Rex's poem?
Well, I didn't know Rex was going to be next. Phil usually saves us for last.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing everything.
I'll just listen to it later.
Okay. No problem. See, now I feel guilty. I'm telling you. Okay, Lon, I have your piece up next, so whenever you're ready.
Okay. Give me a half a mo. And refresh. Find the damn thing. There it is. Okay. This is called Spend It Wisely. Rush of blood to the melodic neuron. Dig for the beat. Lose yourself to emotions hidden. Coming forth unbidden. Neuroses dropping. Flat notes shed. Gone with a singing wind. And you are perfect. Placid. Inhabiting a melodic middle where you can follow moments of life in microcosm. Seconds frozen. Understanding hangs behind closed eyes. Emotions take form. Shadow people smiling with multiple faces. Relax through the end. Lean back and contemplate mood until reality opens its doors and you return to a sprinter's position. Track surface bites your fingers. Starter gun fires. On track launches in endless venues. Crack of a shot echoes, sending the pigeons flying, and you fly after them, one of the flocks traveling to nowhere, hoping for anything different beyond the norms, aged in their spider silk and remnants, unsatisfied with destinations. Pipe of imagination flares under the administration of flickering flame, needle lifts and drops, caressing the vinyl, releasing that melodic neuron. Time machine of youth and memory. Music melting the real world into the coinage of your past. Spend it wisely. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Pam, since you've been off wandering around, you get some dibs.
Oh, yes. Well, you know me. I love my shiny objects. I have to go look at them. and, yeah, I thought this was absolutely... this is absolutely wonderful. I really like some of the alliteration. It's perfect, placid, melodic, middle. But what I like is the main message of how it's so such a wonderful thing that the way music affects the body, that it's almost like this healing of the mind, the spirit, of the body itself. And the way, like, I like that the end stanza talks about how music brings back those good time memories. It's like always those favorite songs. And a wonderful end where you say the coinage of your past, spend it wisely. Because to me, this isn't just talking about music and you know, the connection with music, but it's talking about time itself and how quickly it slips away from us and how we really have to appreciate each moment. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said. And Jean, how about you?
Well, Loran, I think it was a great piece. I think it was clever and well expressed. I like that ending stanza as well. Pipe of imagination flares under the administration of flickering flame. Needle lifts and drops caressing vinyl, releasing that melodic neuron. Time machine of youth and memory. Music melting the real world into a coinage of your past. Spend it wisely. Well done. Well done.
Thank you, Jean.
I'm going to go with what along the same lines, Pam, but there's something else. It's vividity, because you hit on that sort of neuroses dropping, flat note shed, gone with a singing wind. There's that understanding of being taken back in time when the music was alive in that moment and the memories that come along with it, because you hit on that angle. But where was it going? That last stanza, you offer up another little information. Pipe of imagination flares under the administration of flickering flame. Needle lifts and drops caressing vinyl, releasing that melodic neuron. There's a little touch of sitting back, enjoying a little smoke, and rolling with the flavor of the music as well. It walks in that operation of letting the mind drift upon each note and take the flavor in piece by piece, and then just kind of melting into the chair with the music ringing in your ears, not ringing, so to speak, but flowing through your ears. And you hit that tempo note where the body's in tune with the music, and everything is just on that perfect note and pitch of, yes, I'm in that little venue right there, and nothing else is going to disturb me.
Well, you're right about one thing. I do love my chair melting. Thank you very much, Rick.
All right, Jean, we're coming. I'm back with you.
Okay, Bill. Okay, Pam, I have one for you next. So thank you very much.
Oh, I forgot about this one.
I don't know that.
Can I read somebody else's? I don't really want to read mine. Sorry.
You don't want to read yours?
No.
What do you mean? How do you mean? You don't want to read it at all?
No, I don't want to read it at all. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was on the board.
No, it was from Naomi's show, so I didn't think anything about it. Okay, yeah. Sure. Let me just think about this. Sure, here we go.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Higher Motion by Pixie652, and it goes like this. The sun's light is split into shades of violet, red, green, and blue, splashing through eyesight,
this split light ribboning behind us, light of a bird with a tapered beak silhouetted by the day's rays, flitting over glassy cakes and lime shrubbery, pollen floating in air and petals blooming, and home.
Great recap. Thank you very much. And Jane, why don't you start us off? This is right in your bailiwick.
Because I didn't hear you.
Brief.
Doing something else. Ah, okay, I don't know. I think this was a great piece. I was trying to figure out. This was for last Tuesday. I thought it was for my contest. Imagine that. Yeah, I think this was beautifully done. I liked it as a brevity. Each stanza was very nice. And the split light ribboning behind the slate of a bird with the tapered beak silhouetted by day's rays. It's a pretty good good description for any one of those images, for real. Flitting over glassy lakes and lime shrubbery, pollen floating in air and petals blooming. Just nice imagery throughout, and I think it was just a well-done little piece. Excellent.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
I like the colors in the first stanza and the way they are attributed to the split light ribboning behind a flight of a bird, the stanza that Jean quoted. It's a beautiful little piece, giving the imagery necessary to appreciate color, the bird, and the day itself.
Nice. Thank you very much. And Pam, how about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, this is a beautiful brevity. I really like how they drew so much from the image of the photograph itself, but I really like that end stanza, flitting over glassy lakes, because you don't actually see a glassy lake in the image or the lime shrubbery. That's something that the person themselves brought in, and I think that's a wonderful thing about doing a picture prompt is you can write about what you see in the picture and you can write about what you don't see, or what that your imagination creates. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. The scene was well set, and you guys hit on great comments. But that last stanza is the topper, flitting over glassy lakes and lime shrubbery, pollen floating in air and petals blooming. It's got such a nice rosy tint to it, as well as everything else brought forth. So, excellent, Pixie. Thank you very much. For our theme.
Thank you, Dougie.
To you.
I think I know what I'm saying. I'm not sure. No, I'm that one. Okay. But this piece is my garden site. And I have an audio for that. So let me hit the button.
Leaping the Roses. One playful leap parts sunshine like the Red Sea, carrying me over a flood of keepsake roses. The errant wind, toying with feathery hair, rippling my clothing, tickling ears and arms. Licking the golden dewdrops of a rare elixir, dripping from rose petals onto my waiting tongue. A splendid banquet, the gift of this alluring Eden. I daydream of floating in Venetian gondolas, rugged gondoliers sculling the lavender lagoon. Now a sea of violets, honeyed scent most soothing, as the rowing boat divides the coverlet of blossoms, my hand resting in the water, trailing flowers, silky soft. Nothing remains of the little babe I miscarried. Even so, a permanent marker resides for her here. This delightful meadow can be her earthly home, where I run free and leap the roses in her name. The end.
Great read, Garden. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It's really appreciated. And Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's heartfelt and tender. I like the first-person narrative and the use of imagery. And, you know, that ending really definitely hits hard. You know, but I think it's a beautiful way to create a memorial for someone you love, for, you know, a baby that you carried inside yourself. And I really like this all the way through. It has, like I said, a gentle tone to it. It's a beautiful memorial tribute type poem, and a wonderful look at the beauty of flowers and of life. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a great piece. It's you know, I mean, when you read the last stanza and you realize that she had miscarried a baby, then I go back and look at the rest of the poem. I see a person who was very strong mentally, strong enough to create a world, an image that somehow allows her to escape the grief of miscarrying a child, creating a reality where she jumps, leaps the roses for her daughter, where I run free and leap the roses in her name. To write a poem like this, to set it out so beautifully, I don't see the sadness, I don't see the pain, the agony of loss. I see something very, very beautiful in its place. I think that's great.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. And Jean, how about you? You mutating, Jean?
Yes, I was. First time tonight. I'm not going to tell you about the other one. I'm going to tell you. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Where was I? Yes, yes, yes. No, over here, dummy. There it is. I thought that this was beautifully penned. I thought it was a wonderful, it's almost like, I don't want to say it's a wonderful take on the prompt, but I think it was wonderful where the prompt took her. I think it was a lovely tribute to little lost souls, and there was a great strength within her words. She says here, you know, it's loving memory of many miscarried children of friends and relatives, the most recent only a couple of months ago, also in memory of the loss of her niece, Jill, who lived only a few short months. So, you know, that's hard, you know, but I think with this piece, she offers strength to others, to the parents of Jill and the parents that lost or had the miscarriages. And I think that she reaches out and offers some comfort with her words. And at least I hope that that's what this will bring. But I think it was just beautifully done. So thank you so much, Garden Delights, as always. Wonderful. Wonderful work.
Great comments, gang. And I agree with Laurent on this. It isn't sad, although that one single line offers a tinge of sadness, but it really isn't because of everything else that's alluded to, especially the last three lines in here. I think the opening two stanzas kind of walk on that notion of being that little girl again. One playful leap parts sunshine like the Red Sea, licking the golden dewdrops of a rare elixir, dripping from the rose petals onto my waiting tongue. It's almost the notion of living that moment as her daughter would have, so to speak, if it hadn't happened. But then again, offering up this place as her resting place is that notion where she can actually go back and walk her through those moments that she wouldn't get to live, but still understand and be joyous in the moment that she did get what she did have time-wise. But it's a kind of celebration. And it is a beautiful scenery. Thank you, Garden. All right, Jane.
Okie dokie. Well, no. Rex, this brings me to you. I have a piece by Rich F.
Okay. Emotion Ocean by Rich F. Pisces, fish friends floating off downstream, feelings flowing, feral, fickle, surging, emotion ocean still a distant dream, sharing thought waves, heartstrings now converging. We gliss and glide, and moving now in time, the space of curved intention swim, sublime. At last the rivers end, the sea waves beckoning, no more constrained, our consciousness expands. To fill the vastness now beyond all reckoning, we twist and turn our fate now in our hands. So silently we slide from shore to shore to swim apart, and then we meet once more. Pisces, fish fools frolicking for fun, diving deep, cavorting to and fro, hopes submerge and basking in the sun, aquatic adoration, goldfish glow, at last now bubble chants of pure devotion, wassail passion poetry, in motion, and poem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Pam, why don't you lead us off?
This is wonderful. Great read there, Rex. I really like, as always, how he has beautiful rhyme and flow, wonderful alliteration. I like the title of this and how he delves into, what the Pisces are like, the playfulness of the fish in the river. You can see the movement within this. At last the rivers end, the new sea waves beckoning, no more constrained, unconsciousness expands to fill the vastness now beyond all reckoning. And what I like about this is it's not just about physical movement, but rather the movement of the mind, the desire of the spirit to get out there and to have adventure and to learn more. And to see beyond narrow thinking. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think that this was a great piece by Rich F. He's a pretty talented writer. And I have to say that the second stanza, at last the rivers end, the sea waves beckoning. No more constrained, our consciousness expands. To fill the vastness now beyond all reckoning. We twist and turn, our fate now in our hands. So silently we slide from shore to shore to swim apart, and then we meet once more. That was a great stanza. I mean, I liked them all. You know, there was really nothing to dislike. I just was trying to kind of be a little different. You know, I think it was a wonderful, wonderful take on that prompt. The prompt was kind of cool because it had all the fancy, fancy fins and what have you. And I think that he just met that nicely. So, great job, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, this poem speaks to fish, but I think it also speaks to the poet and someone else as well. The hopes submerged yet basking in the sun, aquatic adoration, goldfish glow, at last now bubble chants of pure devotion, poisson, passion, poetry in motion. There is a passion that exists between two swimmers, and there is the poetry in motion of the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Pam and Jean on that middle stanza. At last, the river's end, the sea waves beckoning, no more constrained, our consciousness expands. That moment when you begin to appreciate the vastness beyond all reckoning. Great piece. And great alliterative last line.
Yeah, I'll say. he dropped in quite a bit, but I like the thought. Pisces fish friends. Then he offers up that last stanza. Pisces frolicking for fun.
Well, I know kind you as a chef would know what the word was.
Oh yes, we had to know a few things. So that opening stanza hits on the notion of maybe youth. That second stanza kind of walks in that on the cusp of adulthood. So the consciousness expands to fill the vastness now beyond all reckoning. We twist and turn our fate now in our hands, so we silently slide from shore to shore. This one part, then meet once more. That hits on that notion, maybe a coming together again later on in life. And then you offer up that sort of Pisces fishbowl frolicking for fun, deep cavorting through and fro. So kind of finding each other once more. I like that last line, the Poisson passion poetry in motion was a grand touch to finish this piece off. Nicely done, Rich. Thank you very much.
Okay, kids, we're coming.
It's a back on your table.
Down the...
And no privacy.
We are coming down the home stretch. So everybody just put your seatbelts on. Okay, but the next piece up is by Poetic Picasso. Here we go, Frank. It goes for you, too. Put your seatbelt on. There we go. I put it on.
Through the achromatic presence of a violet mist, a haunting umbra of the murlid dusk emerges, like a falling angel from the lava flame of hell. For so alluring is the spell of her sweet seduction. Before the dank entrance of the clotted cavern stands the image of my eternal condemnation, dressed in garments of a stamel hue of death. She tries to wield dominion with her bowed raven eyes. Her echoic whisper soon begin to call out my name as she caresses me with her flowing bruneous tresses. And I can feel the pleasure of her delicate touch tangibly. The painted fingernails tickle my yearning flesh so vulnerable. The burning candles of the passion light up around me, and I am forsaken to the fate of the charcoal dust blowing that will reduce me to the daunting realm of oblivion, where the crimson clovers once had flourished before. As I strongly resist the vile temptation of a subtle look, the fiery flame of the candles become then so estiferous, and the breath of a soft voice intensifies with the wild winds. Her ebony eyes then change into the hoary film of dread. Lovely violets and jasmines become hideous dried vines, dripping within the dew of a sanguineous colour. And the blackberry trees are drenched in dark copper, for hear the clamour of the tenanted souls of hell. Dark, dark, the hall of darkness like a shroud wraps me and bears me on through mist and cloud, where the darkness begins to develop its drear shadows, and where the light of dawn will fade to never return. I can sense that I'm fading away into the shadow of my death. I can sense that I'm fading away into the shadow of my death.
Ouch.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, I am definitely not sure of the last word and the way that was handled, but to me, this poem is one of Frank's better ones. There's a real sense of purpose in his words, you know, sometimes stanzas can seem seem isolated from each other, but each one follows the next so beautifully. The one I like the best is probably the second one. Before the dank entrance of the Claudian cavern stands the image of my internal condemnation, dressed in garments of the stammel hue of death. She tries to wield dominion with her bold raven eyes. Perhaps not as fancy a stanza as some of the others, especially towards the end, where it really rolls, but it's just something about the way he presents her image, those garments and the stammel hue of death. Wonderful wording.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. Tam, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful read and write, an excellent dark story. I like how the general vibe seems to be about someone being seduced by death, by an angel of death, and giving in. And I really like the imagery within, or the idea that will reduce me to the daunting realm of oblivion where the crimson clovers once had flourished before, as I strongly resist the vile temptation of her subtle look. There's within those lines to me also the idea of almost like an addiction, giving in to the opium. So just a wonderful dark write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I think this is just a well-penned dark piece by Frank. I think that his take on the prompt that I see here is just great. It seems that he leans into that genre with a certain comfort, you know, the dark genre. Your read, as always, is spot on. Your voice adds a new level to your writes always. So great job, Frank, and thanks for sharing. Absolutely.
Great comments, everybody. This is one of Frank's better ones. I like the imagery he's got painted in here. The violet mist, nice touch. Merlot dusk, again, just a nice color, rich and sweet. A dank entrance, a Claudent cavern. Again, that stammer hue of death. Boy, that's nicely rich and her bold raven eyes. Brunius Trestis. Got some really excellent verbiage in here to set off and describe that which he's putting forth. The charcoal dust flowing where the crimson clovers once had nourished before. Again, nice touches. Fire flame of the candles. The violet and jasmine become hideous dried vines. It's a nice touch of going from beauty to ugliness right in the moment. The sanguineous colors in the blackberry trees are drenched in dark copper. I guess vivid imagery, which gives you a nice touch of almost a black and white motif that you can thoroughly get into and understand, and have it kind of get that eerie flow with the right music behind it. Nicely done, Frank. Thank you. All right, Jean. We're back to you.
Okie dokie. Here we go. I have another sound clam. For Diamond D. So here we go.
Blue Bonnets and Hoarfrost by Diane D. Spring. Broken-nosed icebergs aggressively smash up against the shore. Majestic blue bottoms melt in shallow waters. Shining like a spring sapphire, murky as a frozen mud puddle. Fergie bits and growlers, a ship's icemare. Gradual disappearance of snow and ice, short-winged red-beaked puffins diving for fish. Squawking fishhawks returning to their nets. Web-feet terracotta river otters embracing the night. Pesky black flies, gnats when the wind is absent. Surging waterfalls from spring meltwaters, high wave-washed craggy cliffs. Cloaked in a copper glow algae, surreal paths covered with an opaque fog. Sound of spring waves crashing on the beach. Summer. Sleek-bodied humpback whales streamline through every sultry summer. flapping their flippers and flukes on the sloshing surface of the sea. On the rock pursuing Caitlin marks the official start of summer. Bluebonnets spring up by the side of the road, honey apricot flavored baked apple berries tease as the sun brushes its golden trail along the water. The tranquility is sure to wash over in the time of the setting sun, the golden hour. A lack of smog and smoke hits you as your lungs fill with refreshing clean air. Ocean breeze and saltwater joy. Even on the mauseous of days, a coastal stage hosts nature's greatest light show. Fall. Sweet, sultry air soaks up in the beauty of autumn, greeting fog as it creeps in on tiny feet. Pops of red poking out from a soft carpet of vivid green and yellow moss. Sky smeared with orange, pinks, and reds. Fish climbing the fish ladders and waterfalls. And perched atop fence posts, hay bales, and buildings, snowy owls deftly snatch their quarry with their sharp talons. A fresh carpet of orange cloudberries gather. Rock formations jut from the coastline in dramatic silhouette against the gray fog. Rows of birch trees and colorful maples dot the rugged backdrop. The first dawn frosts deliver partridge berries. Winter. Glistening snow veils the trail. Subsoil freezes solidly to depths of many feet. Rivers, ponds, and waterfalls are frozen. Seals popping on the ice floes. Clear glaze ice spins an eerie silver thaw. Winter stomps in on giant bear's feet, squats in the middle of your life like a belching guest who refuses to leave. Paths sparkle and crunch like sugar underfoot. The harbor as gray as a newspaper picture. Your breath rises, invisible puffs of crystalline kisses. Silver storms of hoarfrost entombing landscapes. A sheet of ice so heavy it splits trees in half. Ice crackles beneath the boot. Upon each tree born wan naked from winter's wrath come the first buds of spring. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. That was wonderful. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is absolutely wonderful. An excellent read, just a strong use of imagery. And I like that she takes us through all four seasons. And what to me, what she really does is she gives personality, a distinct personality, as they should have, to each one of the seasons. This is beautiful all the way through, but I do really enjoy that summer one with the sleek body humpback whale streamlined through every sultry summer. I would love to be able to go somewhere to watch the whales. I think that would be absolutely wonderful. And just the description even of the autumn air, sweet, salty air soaks up the beauty of autumn. Amazing lines there and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Jean, how about you? You got to unmute first.
I was so good all night. And it all fell apart. Diane did an excellent job. Each section was a great descriptive painting of each season. And I think it was just a job well done. So nice job, Diane. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you? Are you mutating too?
Yeah, I caught the disease. Let me see, what was I going to say? This is really one of the better rites I've read on the Four Seasons. The addition of the music gives the poem a jaunty air and gives it, as Pam so rightly noted, personality. Personally, I love Newfoundland. I also wanted to know that. This poem, Blue Bonnets and Hoarfrost, really gives us a wonderful look at the Four Seasons in Newfoundland. I particularly like the way she writes. It is almost unique in its descriptiveness, because each stanza is a wonderful little poem almost unto itself. I especially like the stanza, Winter stomps in on giant bear's feet, squats in the middle of your life like a belching guest who refuses to leave. What a great metaphor that is. Just a wonderful piece all the way through. I'm in deep admiration.
Oh, absolutely. This was a stunning piece. It just starts out with spring. And the funny part is her last line walks on that very same thing, going right back around. Upon each tree born wand, naked from winter's grass, come the first buds of spring. So mm-hmm. she delivers right back to the beginning, the notion of return and the onset of that which is new. And that stanza that you read, I got a kick out of that. That was a nice bit, touch of humor in there, too. The giant bear's feet in the middle of your life, like a guest who refuses to leave. Because there is a kind of a nice... And who mentions puffins in poems? Nobody. And yet we got puffins in this one. That was a nice touch as well. Well done, Diane. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Okay. Well, we're not closing up shop just yet. I got one more to do tonight.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to put it in now. And we have another SoundCloud. So we put this up by Argo Wings because I don't want to miss that opportunity. And let me hit the button. Oh, wait. I lied. I have two, but the other one will have to be played another way. Okay, got it.
That little voice inside me needs reading material. Disclaimer. I'm a little too much hot now cheesy potato bites and not enough hippie-ass smoothies. So I switched to less sugar in my coffee, and I can already tell I'm going to be a bitch today. You know when you read something good, like really good, and you can feel the needle enter the vein, heroin style, opening the release valve to an IV of caffeine. Your blood pumps just a touch faster, hairs standing on end in salute, and you start seeing things you're not sure were there before. I want that. I want to be spellbound at dusk, rolling into slumber to dream in the voice of Homer's pen, and wake with a poem on my tongue. Not a big ask.
Great read, Argo. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And that was quite the thought. Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, there's a wry humor in this that I really like. Those first two stanzas, especially. Excuse me. I love the opening. It seems as if the poet was prepared to be very pugnacious, methinks. It's lovely to slide into sleep with a good book, to awaken filled with inspiration. I really like this poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Cam?
Yeah, this is excellent, right? I enjoyed the humor in this. I enjoyed the look at, you know, how that attitude comes in sometimes. And how we learn for and search for those perfect words and feel like, is it really too much to ask? So just an excellent writing, very well done.
And thank you, Pam. Jean, how about you?
I think that Parker did an excellent job with it. I started to chuckle when she said, I think I'm going to be a bitch today.
God, I wake up like that every day. No, I'm only kidding. But I thought it was just really nicely done. I did. And as always, thank you, Argo, for putting that piece in. I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to put a better comment in writing, I promise. I want to thank you guys for all hanging in there tonight, lasting through the whole show. And I hope you all have a wonderful night, and we will definitely have to do this again, maybe next Friday if everybody's free. How about it? What do you think?
All right.
And Rags, thank you for hosting or co-hosting with me. Ron, thanks for calling in and hanging out with us all night. Pam, thank you for hanging in with us. It was great to have you both. As always, you know, we got two carryovers. That's not too bad considering how many we have. And, it'll work. So, y'all take care and have a great night, guys. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.